During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com. Let's kill it because we're running out of time. It's also
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Coming up at 8:30, we'll talk to J.J. Piccolo, Royals GM. Right now, we've got former Chiefs wide receiver Mark Boberg. Mark, what's going on, man? How are you?
Doing all right. It's been a crazy couple of weeks.
Can we can mention that, can't we? It's public.
Oh, yeah, it's public.
Tell us about because I liked it or retweeted or something on social media. Tell us about your wonderful wife, please.
I know what you're alluding to, so we'll just get to that. Yeah, I think it's been about a week and a half now. It came out, I think, 2 weeks ago Friday, 2 weeks ago tomorrow.
Right.
She's now the new head volleyball coach at Lee Summit High School.
Let's go.
Go Tigers.
Let's go!
So, I know she's super excited about it, the opportunity. And
she can start hanging out with the Lebos?
I don't know yet.
He's the mayor of Lee Summit.
He is the mayor of Lee
Summit. He runs things. You got to go through him.
I know.
They might as well call it Lebo Summit.
Right.
But I know this. Right. I know she's super excited about it. They've got, you know, they're redoing their field house over there and doing a lot of renovations and a lot of good stuff happening, so she's pumped about it. Definitely deserving, and
I think I'm smelling a guest for the Women's Sports Weekly segment that we're doing on the Border Patrol. You know,
that's awesome.
Some high school volleyball talk in here.
You can spend a lot of time at Lee Summit.
Yes, sir.
Like I said,
I will.
Todd, you got to go through Todd. You got to talk to him,
and
if he gives you his blessing, then you got carte blanche.
It's like a key to the city.
That's right. Yeah, whatever you want.
But it's an exciting time in our house the last couple of weeks. And then we had our big Chiefs Ambassadors Gala on Friday. Raised over $240,000, record event for us, which was outstanding. And end of the school year. So, you know, trying to get the – I don't really have to worry about my daughter in terms of grades, but – you know, my son is my son, so he has procrastinated some things out and got to get some stuff finished. So that's where we're at on things. But things are busy and things are good.
Okay, so it's been interesting to hear people debate this, and I don't really understand the debate, but whatever. I think the Chiefs would be a better football team had they re-signed Melvin Ingram. I don't know. Some people that don't think that, I guess. And no, he's not a superstar at this point. He's not what he was 5-6 years ago. But I am still somewhat concerned about the depth or lack thereof at edge rusher. I'm not panicking. There's still guys, they can go out there and acquire. There's still trades to be made or what have you. What was your reaction when you saw that Ingram was going to Miami?
My initial reaction was kind of indifferent on some things, but then I saw the deal he got, and I would have had him back here on that deal in like 2 seconds,
right?
Type of thing. So again, there's both parties have to be willing. Right. And what it tells me is that, you know, I think while he enjoyed his time here, he just didn't want to be here.
Let's go to Miami.
Yeah. And that's OK. That's what it tells me, because I believe the Chiefs would have had him back here on that deal also. And the reason I say that is because they put the free agent tag on him that I – you guys know this. I pride myself on knowing pretty much everything that goes on with the CBA and the NFL, and I had no idea this tag even existed that they put on him right after the draft. I was like, what is this tag? Hold on. Because it's buried in there. And really what it was put in place for was, you know, let's just look at the Tyrann Mathieu situation, right? He signs right after the draft, the day after the compensatory selections, you know, deadline goes away. This tag was put in place, that the one that they put on Melvin Ingram to still get a compensatory pick after the fact. And not a lot of teams use it. And again, there's a lot of people I know within the NFL and around that had no idea it existed. And it basically gave them a little bit of control so that if he didn't sign anywhere by July or whatever it was, then he has to go back to the Chiefs. But to me, it you know, it just states that he wanted to go somewhere else and you know, and wanted to go to Miami. And that's fine. That's fine. Because I think this team wanted him back. In fact, I know they did, or they wouldn't have done that, right? And so, you know, I don't necessarily like the term "it is what it is," but that's part of free agency. And the beauty as a player in free agency is if you've got multiple suitors, you can pick on where you want to go. And that's where he decided to go.
And so now he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So out of sight, out of mind. And they are looks like it's going to be a 6th round pick, which oddly enough, it's going to give him 12 picks in the draft again next year.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful.
Draft capital.
But they still need to add another guy, right?
I think they do. Yeah. I look, we talked about the draft in here, you know, right afterwards when I was in, and I like what they did. And I think they've got a lot of good young players, at least as we talked about on paper. It's a matter of, you know, for these guys is if some of these guys can play like we think they can, the future is going to be bright here defensively. But I still think they need depth. I still think they need some veteran depth there. The thing I think why we're talking about Melvin Ingram so much is because he came in and he made an impact right away. Now, is that because of the lack of depth that was here before? Or is that, you know, just that he made that much of an impact? He's an impact type of player. I think, for me, watching him come in here, he provided an attitude and a necessity off the edge, even in the run game, that they didn't have last year. So there has to be some guys that need to step up that have been here, you know, at the defensive end position. But I think that they do still – and, look, this organization isn't done yet, right? We used to be in this cycle where there were the June 1 cuts, right, the salary cap casualties. Well, now you can cut some of those guys early and designate them as a June 1 first cut and take the salary cap hit over 2 years. So there still could be some moving and shaking here that goes on. There's still some guys out there, which I know you're going to ask me about in a second.
Yeah, you better believe
that. On stuff. And so, you know, they're not done yet, but they still need to add some depth.
Would general manager Mark Boerichter be interested in free agent Jadeveon Clowney?
So I was just looking at this a minute ago. He's only 29. I say only 29. But it feels like Jadeveon Clowney's like 35 to me, just because,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
because he's been on so many teams, and fair or not, because of where he was taken in the draft, he hasn't lived up to those expectations. I think he's a good player. My concern is his injury history on things, and then you also look at it and say, okay, here's a guy that's been on multiple teams at this point in his career. Why is that? And a big portion of that, I think, has been his health. I, you know, what do you have, 8, 9 sacks last year?
9.
So, decent amount, okay, decent amount of sacks and production. You know, I haven't gone back and looked at all those 9 sacks. You know, some of those, 3 or 4 of those could be, you know, 6, 7 seconds into the drop back where it's really not that much of an impact, even though it's a sack. So, I think they would be sniffing around at that for sure. But he's a little different because he's commanded a higher dollar on these 1-year deals. And my kind of just opinion on him is it's more about name recognition with the Jadeveon Clowney than it is, you know, production and his health. And to me, the biggest piece is his health because he's missed a lot of time over the years know, because of injuries.
So the other problem here is the lack of faith from most people in Frank Clark and his ability to be better than he was last year. Now, we did find out he was dealing with some physical issues and, as he described, some mental issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did have, you know, some games where it appeared like, okay, this looks like the Frank Clark that the Chiefs traded for. But he's been inconsistent at best, right? Do you have any hope that, and clearly this is going to be his last year in Kansas City,
yeah,
that we will see a better Frank Clark, number one, that he's motivated to go out and try to get one more contract. Number two, he's just motivated because he needs to be better and help this football team get back to the Super Bowl, because that would go a long way into alleviating my fears and most people's concerns about this pass rush. If Frank Clark would be better, can he be better, or is he a declining player? We're not going to see him get back to even what he was his first year with the Chiefs.
Well, I think he's a descending player and a declining player from a physical standpoint. And I've talked to some people that over the last couple of years, he's had more physical ailments going on than anybody really knows. Let alone the off-the-field stuff that's happened. We've heard him talk about, you know, his mental health on stuff, and I'm certainly respectful of all of that as well. And when I say he's a declining player, I think you've got to look at tempering your expectations as to what he is now. You know, he's back now for $1 million more of salary cap than it would have cost to cut him. So basically, by redoing his deal and staying here for another year, on things, they value his leadership, they value where it's at, and they still think that he can make an impact on this team. That being said, I think they got to put him in a position where he's a situational pass rusher now, where he's fresh. And there are a lot of guys like this in the National Football League who can go out and get you 12 sacks a year, 10 sacks a year, that are really situational pass rushers. I think there's going to be a level of motivation for him, though, because, as you mentioned, I don't think he's going to get another big deal, Steven, right? I just don't. Not here, number one. But I don't think he's going to get another big deal somewhere else. But I could see him going somewhere else on a year deal or 2-year deal, something like that,
in the future. There's a few more millions to be made by him.
There is. Where I'm going with this is, I don't think it's going to be a long-term big deal, but I think it's going to be a situation where there's still money to be made for him. So when I say he's a declining player, that doesn't mean that he's done after this year. It's just going to be in a situational aspect, and there's still money to be made for him. So they need him to be better. I think if they put him in the right situations, and you hate to say this about a guy that's taking up $13 million of cap space, but, you know, you've got to put him in the right situations where he's fresh on the field. And that's where, hopefully, with some of the youth they have, and hopefully guys like Mike Dana and a few of those other guys can step up a little bit. And I kind of look at the defensive end position in this pass rush now, with Chris Jones obviously in the middle, as this kind of has to be the sum of all parts. Okay. You know, we've relied here with Chris Jones getting double digit sacks, having a great year. In years past, it's been Justin Houston. In years past, it's been Tamba Hali, right? In years past, it was Frank Clark a little bit. But this almost has to, I think we have to look at this defensive line and the pass rush kind of how we're looking at the wide receiver core now. Is, you know, the receiving core lost Tyreek Hill, a lot of production. You're not just going to replace that guy. It's going to be the sum of the entire body of work from all of those guys in terms of production. And I think that's, you know, if you can get, let's say, 8-9 sacks out of Frank Clark, Karlaftis has a great rookie year, right? He gets, you know, around that. And Chris Jones gets the double digits like he can. Mike Dana had, 5-6 sacks last year. You start stacking a few of those guys up on top of each other and creating a consistent pass rush across the board. That's what they need.
And see, that's why I wanted Melvin Ingram to come back. Not because Melvin Ingram is going to go out there and get 12 sacks. Melvin Ingram could just be part of the rotation,
yes,
to where you're not at, kind of like the way they're attacking wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
They're not asking one guy to replace Tyreek Hill, just one more guy, one more cog in the machine that could hopefully improve this pass rush across the board. Nate Buchanan.
You know, to go back to Clowney and what you said about him and all the different places he's been, listening to Daniel Jeremiah talk about him last year when it was like, okay, where is he going to end up? Because it seems like he's also one of those guys the last couple times around, it's been like, okay, he's still out there. He's still out there. So it not only does he not last long anywhere, he seems to go down to the wire, and or, you know, he's a late signing type of guy. And you know, Daniel Jeremiah was talking about that, and his read from talking to people around the league is he's one of those guys that you just don't know what effort level you're going to get from mm-hmm. play to play, you know? And I don't know. We had this back and forth with Matt Derrick about Frank Clark and what he's like in the locker room and if he's a good influence or a bad influence, he's a leader or not a leader and all that. It's hard to know. To me, I find Frank Clark's time in Kansas City to be enigmatic because it's like, okay, he's had stretches where he's been really good to help the team. It seems like he's always been dealing with some sort of health issue. Had that digestive issue, remember, his first mm-hmm. year. Then he's battling other types of injuries and the stress of last year. So I don't know how much of it's intermittent effort versus how much of it's just he's not healthy enough to go out and play. But
you said you've heard he's been dealing with more stuff.
I've heard that there's been more stuff health-wise, yeah. Which I'm not going to sit here and, you know, tell you everything I've heard on it. But but it makes – to me, when I watch him play, it makes a little more sense.
It explains what you're seeing on the field.
If you talk to guys, I'll just say this. Like, if you talk to, you know, I mentioned our ambassador gal, right? You talk mm-hmm. to some of the guys, former players and stuff, and we watch him play, and guys that actually, you know, watch some film and stuff, not just watch the TV copy of things. He doesn't have much of a secondary move anymore. It's just kind of a speed rush off the edge. And that tells me it's either he's completely lost it, which I don't think that's the case in other people I've talked to. I think it's been some physical, you know, some physical capabilities there that have hampered him on things. And so
now what are the odds that he's going to be healthy this year?
Yeah, I don't know the answer. Right? That's why I say he's got to be a situational guy. Now, I've heard from people within the organization, too, that really the leaders of that defense last year, obviously, were Tyrann Mathieu and his voice. But Frank Clark is much more of a leader than people realize inside the locker room. That's what I've heard through a lot of people. So, you know,
so if Clown, let's say you add Clowney to that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if Clowney, if the knock on him is the motor's not there to just go every play the way that supposedly like Karloftis is, can you pair him up with Frank Clark and then you're not asking either one of them to do it as much and then you get more production out of it?
Yes, that's why I say it's got to be situationally, right? Yeah. Because I mean, one of the biggest plus sides to Karloftis is the fact that anybody you talk to, anything, any scouting report you read on him is he is a high motor guy. If you can put in some high motor guys and rotate that piece through, you certainly can get a consistent pass rush. Because it's hard, and you guys have heard Grunty talk about this, you know, as an offensive lineman going against defensive tackles and defensive – those guys, it is so much different for them to try to give – 100% on every single play. And I know fans are going to look at that and go like, well, you should be able to give 100. When you're that big, you know, it gets exhausting and you're pushing on other 300-pound mm-hmm. men. Like, it's just difficult to do. And so that's why they rotate guys in and out of there. That's why that happens. They're not – those guys aren't like us as wide receivers, as I sit here right now way out of shape, but, like, that can run for days. You know, it's different. And so – yes, you can pair them together to answer your question, Nate. Now, I'm not going to tell you and sit here and be like, they should be on the field for three downs apiece opposite of each other, you know?
Right.
But Clowney has played inside a little bit more on some things, too. I mean, it gives you some options there. So I think it's viable. Again, my concerns, I'm not saying no to it. My concerns are, what's the price tag going to be? And what's, you know, you're bringing up the effort level, but what's the health going to look like and what's the effort level going
to
be?
I like your voice to the fan. Well, you should get out there and play 100%. Hey, Mark, thanks for coming in, man. We appreciate the time with you. And I'd like you to come in and do more voices of different people and fans.
I did enjoy your dramatic, whiny reading of Nate's text messages.
Look, as I said on the podcast with Nate Beasler, to defend myself, everything Steven said is true.
Yeah, right. That's my man, Mark Bowrick. You're back after this on WHB. Tiki's on. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucchetti, Marco Marquez on this Thursday, May 19th, 2022. Let's say hello to Royals General Manager J.J. Piccolo. J.J., good morning. How are you?
Doing fine, guys. How you doing?
Well, I bet you're doing fine after last night's game. Let me tell you something. That was fun to watch. And listening to Bobby Witt Jr. and MJ Melendez talking about hitting home runs, listening to MJ talk about catching Zach Greinke, Emmanuel Rivera had a couple of hits, Kyle Isbell had a couple of hits. It's like we saw the future on full display last night. That had to be something, watching that game the way it played out, that was very satisfying for you last night.
Yeah, it was really one of the better ball games that we've played all year. I thought the at-bats from the very beginning were great. We ran Giolito's pitch count up to 69 pitches after three innings, and that's a great sign. The guys are staying disciplined in their approach and have a really good idea of what they're trying to do. And then, of course, Zach did what Zach does all the time. We just got to figure out a way to get him a win. He's pitched too well not to have a win, but he was outstanding, and the bullpen did a great job. So it was a really good all-around win. And as you said, the young guys being on the field and being big contributors to that win was outstanding.
And, J.J., nobody ever wants to see Salvador Perez on the IL. But here is the opportunity for MJ Melendez to play every day, to get reps behind the plate. And so far, I mean, he's catching both ends of the doubleheader. He's hit home runs in back-to-back days. Tell me a little bit about what you're seeing from MJ Melendez and about this opportunity with Salvi right now, injured with that sprained thumb, for MJ Melendez to get at least a longer look at what he can do at the major league level, catching guys like Zach Greinke and coming up with big hits like he has the last couple of nights.
Well, you know, it's very unusual, too. I think he was the third catcher in Royals history to catch both ends of a doubleheader. I mean, we don't do that in the minor leagues, yet alone the major leagues. But to see him catch those two games and then come back and do what he did, it was really Mike's call, and I think he did a great job. He thought MJ was starting to get into a rhythm behind the plate in that doubleheader. He struggled in Baltimore and a couple of the other games, and just a little bit of I would say nerves, really. First time back there in the major leagues, he's a little bit nervous. He wasn't himself. But Mike recognized that he was starting to settle in that doubleheader and gave him another start, Hall of Fame pitcher. So, you know, I heard Zach had some nice comments about how MJ handled him. So that's going to build confidence. MJ will build off of that, knowing that he called a good game, caught a good game. And you're right, the opportunity is there right now for him to catch a little bit more than it. We want Salvi healthy, but to gain this valuable time behind the plate is only going to propel MJ into the future and be more prepared and catch better games and gain great experience. So it's going to be a nice little run for him here, and he'll handle it. He's a baseball player. You know, he's always had a knack for stepping up in the big moments. He knows what it means to the pitching staff to catch and make the defense a priority, and he's got a lot of confidence in his offense. So it's going to be nice to see him back there for whatever period of time that it ends up being.
And I'm jumping ahead here, but let's say, you know, let's be optimistic and say MJ continues to progress and hits well and handles the catching duties well. If he does that, when Salvi comes back, and I know that MJ was, you know, up with the team before Salvi, you know, went on the IL, but is there a formula that makes sense to keep MJ at the major league level with a healthy Salvi and continue to see him develop as a catcher and get him the proper amount of playing time that you want to see him get?
Yeah, it's going to be a balance. I mean, that to get the time behind the plate, when you say develop, is going to be more of the challenge, I think. Getting him in the lineup is less of a challenge if he's swinging the bat well. He's very athletic. You know, there were a couple other things he did last night, smaller things, just the way he hit that single left field, the way he goes down, makes a turn at first base, really puts pressure on the defense. You know, you got to be athletic to do that. And with that, we've played him in the outfield. We've played him at third base. So if he's swinging the bat well, I think it's our responsibility to get him in the lineup more. And help this offense. And whatever games he can get behind the plate, Chris Albee's injury. He was DH'ing about twice a week, so we know there's going to be two games a week he can catch. And then if there's the right matchups, maybe at times he catches three games a week. Now, down the road, I'm just glad that he's getting time behind the plate right now.
We're visiting with Royals general manager J.J. Piccolo, and you mentioned him helping the offense. Obviously, that was the big news this week, and you've already discussed the decision to make a move from the hitting coach and bring in Alex Zumwalt. We had Alex on the show back in spring, before the season even really got started, and had a really great conversation with him about his philosophy that he's been kind of implementing through the organization. We had Buster Olney on this morning, JJ, and we're talking with him a little bit about it. He said he talked to a baseball exec earlier this year that said the worst job in professional baseball today is that of a hitting coach, because every hitter has his own personal guy that he works with out on the side that's giving him one set of instructions and messages, and that if the hitter goes out and does well, that guy gets all the credit. And then if the hitter comes and struggles, then the hitting coach gets all the blame. And I'm curious, like, what is the landscape like now when it comes to trying to coach guys to hit versus maybe what it's been like in the past?
It is very difficult, and that's a great point that was made by Buster. You know, there's a component of that that has always existed. Guys develop relationships in off seasons, and sometimes it's not a coach. Sometimes it's just a player, you know, somebody that they train with that will lean on. They'll lean on each other throughout the season. But it is very challenging, you know, for hitting coaches and pitching coaches. You know, we sort of joke around and say everybody's got their guru. So a few years ago, we just started to accept that is what's happening in the game, more so today than ever. And we went down the route of building relationships with the people who were the influencers on our players on the outside, just to make sure we were lock in step with the messaging to the players. Now, if you have times where you disagree maybe with what somebody's telling a hitter to do, then you have a little bit more of an issue. But the majority of the time, they are working on the same things, have the same thoughts. In putting our staff together a couple of years ago, we did have that in mind, and that's why we expanded our hitting department. It wasn't just Alec. It was also Drew Saylor. It was also Keone Duran and Mike Tozar. And they all represent very different things. They've got great personalities and what they communicate with the hitters, but they all represent different things in their backgrounds and their knowledge. So we like to think that regardless of how a player likes to talk about hitting, we have somebody that's well-equipped to talk with them in their language. And that's what I think a lot of our successes so far in the minor leagues, I think that can be attributed to just that.
We're speaking with Royals general manager J.J. Piccolo. And J.J., obviously the decision was made to move on from hitting coach Terry Bradshaw. And so with the team struggling, it seemed like it was, you know, it was bound to happen that there was going to be some changes made. And so one question that many people have wondered and a lot of fans have asked as well, and if you could elaborate on this, I think it would be a good way to explain things to fans and people that are on the outside looking in. Why was it the right decision to move on from Terry Bradshaw, and why is it the right decision to stick with Cal Eldred as pitching coach?
Well, I think both groups of players are vastly different. Expectations of our offense, because we had more veteran players in the lineup. You know, we did have Bobby Witt Jr. in the lineup. He was really the one young guy. You know, early on, Isabel and Olivares weren't playing. MJ was in the minor league, so we did have a more veteran group on the hitting side, and we felt like our offense, you know, from opening day should help the pitching. You know, so when you have a young pitching staff, if you're scoring one or two runs, it puts more pressure on the young pitchers. So that was the main reason, and really we just didn't see and even in some cases sustaining, you know, what we had done before. So, you know, that's the answer to that. But with the pitching, our rotation is extremely young, and I know there's, you know, thoughts about they're underachieving. I just think they're developing. You know, they're learning in the major leagues. That's a difficult place to do it. We're the youngest rotation in all of baseball. Three out of every five nights when we go through a rotation, we have guys with, you know, really fewer than 50 career starts. That's tough. And it also affects our bullpen. You know, if we can't get starts like we've gotten the last three games where guys are going, you know, anywhere 5 2/3, 7, and we're doing that consistently, if we're not doing it consistently, that bullpen gets worn down. So I think the pitching, the youth on the pitching side, seeing some signs of improvement, and also going into this year knowing that we were going to have some ups and downs with the starting pitching, is the reason why we made the decision we did to go with the hitting first, I should say. And now we just got to continue work getting our pitchers better. I mean, that's the bottom line. They got to get better, but we also have to recognize that they're young.
Yeah, well, we saw, obviously, a tremendous step from Brady Singer in the last game, and I do want to ask you about that here in a minute. But, you know, to tie it together to the question I asked earlier about the hitting situation, where you got everybody has their guru, I think was kind of the way you put it. I'm guessing that the pitching world is similar there, that each guy's got his guru or, you know, some coach that's working with him as well. And I'm sure you know about this. There was an article in The Athletic that came out not too long ago that kind of that illustrated some pitchers that have left Kansas City and had some success. And there was a little comment in that article that suggested that maybe players on the Royals team are aware of those things. And so, you know, to kind of go back to what you said about having those relationships with the hitting coach, do you have any concerns about the messaging with your young pitchers that they're buying into it? All the way around with your organizational philosophy when it comes to pitching?
I don't have any concerns. I really feel like the pitchers are getting better. The thing that our young pitchers have to realize is when you're in the major leagues, you do need to produce. And if you don't produce, then we have to make decisions about where you need to pitch at that moment. But I know how hard minor league side, along with all of the pitching coaches in the minor leagues, I know the processes that are in place. These guys move very fast through the minor leagues. When you look at five guys out of one draft that are pitching or have pitched in the leagues, and it's a historic draft, I think it's really hard to question the processes because no team has ever done that, and that's a fact. So, you know, when people question our processes, I think my question back would be, do you know our processes? You know, that's the thing that's always behind the curtain. Nobody really knows. So if you told me in 2018 that five guys out of one draft 3 years later would be making starts in the major leagues, I'd take that every day of the week. And I think that's a testament to our processes. And I know that our pitchers understand what they are. And they've all had their share of successes in the major leagues, from Singer the other night to past performances to Bubich to Carlos Hernandez to Scott in September and what he's done so far. Daniel Lynch is continuing to get better. So the processes are in place. They're the right processes. It just takes some time for major league pitchers. I spoke to somebody yesterday. You know, Dylan Cease over there with the White Sox, he's pretty darn good. But it took him a few years in the major leagues to become really good. And that's where we have to exercise patience, evaluate our processes, because every guy is a little bit different, and push the buttons at the right time. But I know to get this group to the major leagues, as pleased as we did, the processes in place are very good.
J.J. Piccolo, Royals general manager, guest. All right, so Brady Singer looks great the other night. And this is a good example. So people from the outside looking in see it as, well, Brady Singer has two pitches. He needs to add that third pitch. He needs to commit more to throwing the changeup, and it seems like he's resisting that, and that's what's led to his struggles. He goes back down. He throws a changeup. He comes up. I think he threw 16 or 17 changeups, and not just that, but as you know, we have former major league pitchers on the show all the time that talk about it's a feel pitch. Once you get a feel for it, it's not just throwing the pitch. It's how pitchers react to other pitches and how it sets up hitters. Is it as simple as that? That getting Brady Singer to buy in to throwing that changeup, feeling comfortable throwing that changeup. Is that the biggest key to unlocking his potential and to seeing more of what we saw from him the other night?
Well, it's certainly going to play a factor into what type of starter he's going to be in the major league. So if you ask Brady Singer, he's going to tell you, I want to be a number one starter. Well, what do number one starters do? They command their fastball. They have two secondary pitches that they can rely on. They're creative in the way they game plan and attack hitters. They feel their position. You know, all those things are what number one starters do. So, you know, for him to be a quality top of the rotation guy, that third pitch was necessary. And in 2020, you know, he was promoted to the major leagues out Double A, so he really had one year in the minor leagues. And if there's one regret I have, that I'm to shoulder the blame, we should have forced him to throw more changeups in 2019. We just didn't anticipate, a pandemic year, shortened season, and we made the decision to start him in the major leagues that entire year because we felt like, we can develop him in the major leagues. Well, that third pitch never came around, and it became very evident to us that that was something that was going to be really necessary. But most importantly, it became evident to Brady. But the other thing that he did an outstanding job, he committed to that pitch, and he's got a pretty good one right now. And the other thing he did is he straightened out his fastball movement profile. His fastball was not moving the same way it had in past years. Cal Eldred did an outstanding job. And then Dane Johnson, our AAA pitching coach, along with Paul Gibson, did an outstanding job. Our analytic department did an outstanding job to get Brady's fastball movement back to where it was in college in 2019, in 2020, and 2021. And with that came command. So he had fastball command. He had great movement. His slider was outstanding. And now he's got a third pitch. So it was a really nice job done collectively with the major league staff and the minor league staff coming together. And then most importantly, the player bought in and he went and did the work. He's a great competitor. And, I would have bet a lot of money that he would have pitched well the other night. And he did just that.
We're visiting with Royals general manager J.J. Piccolo. And J.J., one of the things that also came out when you guys spoke to the media and stuff earlier this week, you talked and Dayton talked, and it's a different setup now with you being the GM and Dayton going up to the president of baseball operations. And I think all of us are trying to kind of figure out, okay, how does the decision-making process work now? And look, I know that you guys have always been a collaborative organization. It's not like Dayton just made all the decisions before and didn't take any input from the rest of you guys. But it is, I think it's something we're all trying to learn a little bit. How would you describe the way that process works now, maybe compared to how it was in the past?
Well, Dayton's still going to make all the final decisions. In this particular case, I had been with the club, for the first month of the season. Saw all the road games as well. And it was, my recommendation that we start talking about where we're going with the hitting, what we're seeing. There were other people involved in the conversation as well. And then ultimately after the Texas series, I went back to Dayton and said, well, I think we really need to think about what we're going to do here. And we can ride this out or we can make a decision now and try to get on track a little bit faster. And, Dayton was open-minded to it. Ultimately, he gave me the stamp of approval to make the change. But, every situation is going to be a little bit different, but it hasn't changed. I mean, Dayton still has the final call. I'll make more recommendations now than I have in the past. And, just being familiar with the team, being with the team, watching the work, talking to coaching staffs, I'm a little bit closer to it right now than I've ever been. So I'm more comfortable making recommendations to Dayton.
J.J. Piccolo is our guest. J.J., when you have veterans like Carlos Santana and Ryan O'Hearn struggling, and O'Hearn has shown the ability to be a very good pinch hitter, but hasn't produced when he's been in the lineup at cleanup, and Carlos Santana hasn't produced like he normally has even since the All-Star break of last year. How long do you go with veterans like that before you decide, that those at bats should go to guys like Emmanuel Rivera or Kyle Isbell or ultimately Vinny Pasquantino when he gets called up. What's the balance there? Will you give the veterans at bats to see if they can come out of this before you decide, you know what, we're better served to give these at bats to younger players with more upside?
Yeah, I think the, you know, each player is a little bit different. I mean, I don't think there's a rock solid answer to that. It's more of a feel thing. You know, you tend to trust the veteran players more because they've done it. They've been through the struggles. They've gotten in and out of struggles. I thought the road trip, you know, you could see Whit Merrifield getting back to his swing. You saw Salvi doing some things that look more like Salvi. And that's going to happen for Carlos. We believe it's going to happen. You know, at what point, you, to be very honest, you got to have somebody that you know is ready to step in and can do better. I mean, there's, you know, the player's got to be performing. They've got to be in a sound place fundamentally, mentally, where you feel really good about making a recommendation on sending a young player up. Breaking into the major leagues is hard. You know, most people will tell you, most executives I've spoken to say you tend to be a little too early than too late because you read into what's happening at the lower levels and you believe it's a player's ready. The gap between AAA and the major leagues is greater than it's ever been for whatever reason. It's executives across the game, scouts across the game. I hear that constantly. The AAA is really watered down. So you got to be careful about your evaluations on when a player is ready. But at the same time, that's why you go out and you acquire guys who have been in the major leagues because they can weather the storm. Their experience is going to allow them to get through some tough times. So we just have to ride this out, trust that the experience is going to pay off, and Carlos and others will swing the bat better. They're major league hitters, and there's a lot to be said for that.
You know, we heard Dayton, you know, talk about how, you know, maybe some of these younger pitchers would have benefited more from more time at AAA. And so I mentioned Vinny Pasquantino. He's at AAA right now and producing. And you mentioned this gap that's bigger than it ever has been before between AAA and the major league. So in a perfect world, how long do you want a guy like Vinny Pasquantino to produce at AAA? What do you need to see from him in Omaha before you decide, okay, he's ready to make the jump, let's bring him up?
Hey, you just want to see it over a long period of time. And, you know, when I say long, I'm not talking about years. You just want to see it. I mean, we got to remember, too, I mean, there was a shortened season in 20 where he didn't get a lot of at-bats. There was a season in 21 where he was high A to double A. And now he's in AAA for the first time. It takes some at-bats. I mean, the old saying was you need 1,000 career bats. I mean, Vinny, not sure if he's there just yet, but, you know, and it's not like we're waiting to hit that number and get him there. But he needs to continue to see upper-level pitching and do it consistently. And when he's doing it consistently, then you feel much better about it. You know, in AAA, what happens is you get more guys that pitch backwards. They're throwing change-ups, breaking balls earlier in the count, and really across baseball now, you're seeing organizations, you know, really target 45% fastball, you know, usage, which is incredible. You know, we used to be, we're trying to get 65, 70, and in an era where guys are throwing 95, like falling off of trees, they throw less fastballs. But that goes to the game planning. So the more, whether it's Vinny or Nick Prado or whoever it may be, the more they see that and the more consistent they are with their performance over a period of time, you know, the more comfortable you are. And we're not there yet with Vinny or Prado. We just need to continue to see them doing what they're doing. Yeah, you know, they're doing fine. Nick came off an injury, got hit in the head, and missed 7 days or so, and he's getting back and getting his timing. But we need to continue to see them do it at that level. And then you feel better that maybe the gap's closed a little bit more. There's still going to be some regression when they get to the major leagues, but maybe that gap's closed a little bit more with more bats.
So how do you evaluate like a young guy like Kyle Isbell, who's not getting regular bats, but he's at the major league level? Like, how do you decide, okay, well, he needs to be in the lineup more and get more at bats?
Yeah, that's the tough one. You know, these guys, once they get on a 40-man roster, they got to be able to contribute to our major league team. And, you know, as much as we want them to get 500, 600 plate appearances a year, when you're on that 40-man roster, you know, you have to be part of the team at some point during the year more often than not. So we don't really have the option of sending Isbell down to AAA at any time. You know, we did it a little bit this year because we thought we were about to hit a stretch where he wasn't going to play a lot. But if he's going to get at bats 3 or 4 days a week, then he needs to be up because he's on our 40-man roster. You only have so many players to compete with. So you get 26 active a night. You know, then you have the other 14 guys. So that is a tough balance. It's something we talk about all the time. You know, is he better in AAA or big leagues? Right now, he's better in the big leagues because he's going to be playing a lot, and he's doing a nice job with it. So it's a tough balance, but you are bound by your roster and your options. You know, same thing we talk about our starting pitching. We got a lot of young guys on that 40-man roster. They have to pitch in the major leagues, and the ones that are pitching well will pitch in the major leagues. The ones who aren't will pitch in Omaha. So that's how we got to manage it.
We're visiting with J.J. Piccolo, getting some fantastic information here on the Kansas City Royals. And I want to go back to something you said just because it intrigued me when you said the gap between AAA and the big leagues is bigger than it's ever been, and AAA is a little watered down right now. I guess that surprises me because I guess my assumption would have been with the paring down of the minor leagues and less teams out there and available, that maybe that would have forced more talent up to the AAA level. But it doesn't sound like that's the case. Do you have any ideas why the AAA level is not maybe what it used to be?
Yeah, it's younger. That's really the difference. Because of contraction, everybody's pushing their players forward faster. So you really have, and I can't say that I know this to be the case, but I have a really good instinct that low A ball right now is the equivalent of what rookie ball used to be. You know, high A is low A, double A is high A, and triple A is more like double A in past years. So the veteran players right now, guys that have major league experience, guys that have competed at the highest levels, go look at the Monarchs, Kansas City Monarchs roster right now. They've got some pretty good players on that team. Past years, that team, those players would be in triple A, and a younger player is going to get challenged at a higher So they're just going to get challenged in a more compatible way that they would in how they would see it in the major leagues. You know, that's the biggest difference. And contraction has really hurt our game in a lot of ways. It's sad to say that, but we're seeing it. And that's why you see a lot of really young players who are going to be stars struggle when they get to the major leagues because that jump is just greater than it's ever been.
I'm so disappointed with all the contraction in minor leagues, and I know you guys are as an organization as well. We're visiting with J.J. Piccolo on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. And J.J., one other thing I wanted to ask you about when you spoke the other day, there was reaction from fans when you said, hey, we're still in it. And, I heard from fans said, hey, how could they say that? They're at the bottom of the standings in the American League, et cetera, et cetera. And the thing that I said was, well, boy, I remember – I think it was 2013 when Dayton Moore, I think it was something like he said, hey, if we rattle off 15 wins out of 20 games, we're going to be right back in this thing. And people mocked Dayton for saying that, like, hey, when was the last time the Royals won 15 out of 20? And damned if they didn't go win 15 out of 20, like, right after he said that. And that sticks in the back of my mind anytime something like this comes up, that you don't know when a team's going to get hot. And I guess you guys, when you're evaluating your own team, You love these guys. You've invested in these guys. You got a personal stake in it too. How hard is it to determine if you're in it, if you're not in it, when the team's maybe not playing the way you think they're capable of?
Well, I mean, I'm when I said that the other day, I'm looking at our division, and we haven't played well right now. We haven't hit well. We haven't pitched well. We've played great defense, and our bullpen has done a really good job considering how many innings they've had to pitch. So when you go through a stretch like that, and then you look at the standings, and I always look at the loss column. You know, to me, the win column, I hear a lot of people talking about that, you know, how many wins we have. The loss column ultimately is what matters. And not a whole lot separates us, you know, from the top of the division. You know, and if you go on a good 1 week, 10 day run in this division, you're back in it. You know, and it's very obvious to me. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Yeah, now you have to go out and do those things. I mean, you have to go out and you have to pitch better, and you have to hit better. You have to get more timely hits, and situationally, you got to execute. If you do those things, you know, you're going to win more games. I really believe right now we should have at least 4 more wins than we do, simply because we need the runner in from base. Regardless of whatever else happened in those games, if we had gotten some runners in from third, we would have 4 more wins. And with 4 more wins, I don't know what the standings are today. You might be in second place. At worst, you're in third place. So that's why I made that statement, and I do believe in our players. I do believe that we're going to play better. And if you're playing better and then you get on a hot streak, now anything can happen. There's a lot of season left. We're not even at the quarter mark yet. I think we hit our 40th game on Monday. So we got 3/4 of our season left. Things are going to get better. Players are going to play better. And all along, we felt like this is going to be a year where we have to simply show improvement. The pitching's got to show improvement. The young hitters who we thought would get up, whatever they're doing from the beginning to the end of the season, they have to show improvement. If those things happen, you know, we believe we have a club that can win.
Hey, JJ, we appreciate your time so much. And before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about, there's been a few reports out there that this move is going to be made today with Michael A. Taylor. In his situation, having to be away from the team. AAA, Dairon Blanco, who is an outfielder that defected from Cuba when he was 25 years old. The Royals acquired him from the A's, trading Jake Diekman for him. You've had him for a couple of years. He's 29 years old. He has 80 grade speed. He has a on-base percentage of around .380 down at AAA, although, you know, again, he is 29, but it's a unique situation, and that may be the guy, and I'm not, you know, you could confirm that or not, that is going to be called up today. But that's an intriguing talent that has a unique skill set. Could you tell me more about him as a player if indeed he ends up being the guy that comes up?
Well, we have a couple different options that we've discussed, but the thing that Dairon does is he can run. And he steals bases, and he plays good defense. He can go play center field if needed. So it is a unique talent. He's improved with the bats in the time that he's been with us. But the speed and the defense have always been what jumped out at us. You know, as we've talked about over the years, we always look for those speed players, somebody who can cover the ground in center field, and he can do that. And I give him a lot of credit because when we first acquired him, everything was new. We had a different approach to things than the club he had been with. He was open-minded. He's gotten better with the bunting part of the game, to get on base, use speed. You know, so if we end up going with him, it will complement what we need right now. You know, if we need a pinch runner, he was the best option for us. We need somebody to go play defense. He's a very good option for that. So that's that's certainly the way I know it was reported. That's the way we're leaning. We'll make a final decision here probably within the hour, and it'll be exciting for him or anybody else who would get that call.
JJ, you know, I'm no scout, but I'll just tell you, give you some unsolicited tips over here. But this Bobby Witt Jr. and Daniel Lynch are looking pretty damn good right now at the major league level. I don't know if you've seen that, but I like what I'm seeing right now. I don't know. There's a lot to like there.
This Melendez kid too. Yeah. You might want to keep an eye on him.
But seriously, when any starting pitcher goes to Colorado and gets to a start, and doesn't give him any runs, you got to sound sirens. I mean, to do that, because I was like, oh boy, this would be a test. That had to have you giddy, right? And you're watching Bobby Wood Jr. hit home runs. You like sit back and go, oh, yes, it's happening.
Yeah. No, it's really nice when you see the young guys. I mean, as we've been talking about, it's tough in the major leagues, and when young guys get beat around a little bit and then they get up and stand up and keep fighting, then start performing, and then they settle in, you know, that's a really good feeling. And I thought what Daniel did in Colorado was just simply outstanding. I mean, he came up with a game plan. He stuck with it. You know, he made great pitches when he had to, and it was a really mature outing for him, you know, in a tough place to pitch. You know, I don't think anybody looks forward to going to Colorado to pitch. So So it's a good sign, as well as Junior swinging the bat, taking better at bats, and MJ and others. So we just need to keep it moving in that direction.
And next time, JJ, we'll talk about how much I love Nick Lofton and Michael Massey, two of the guys I've locked in on in the minors now because of my
You got two new favorites.
Well, that's the great thing. Hey, they just keep on coming. Yep. So there's always, no matter how many years I do this job, I lock in more prospects. So JJ,
whenever you call up Pasquantino, he's just gonna move on to the next guy. He's kind of a floozy Vinny. Like that, JJ.
That's my nickname, JJ. Hey, JJ, thanks for the time. We appreciate you being so open and honest with us, and we look forward to having you on the show again soon.
Sounds good, guys. Thank you.
That is Royals General Manager J.J. Piccolo, who now calls me a front runner. So what? I'll take it.
I think you're more of a floozy than a front runner. You just kind of, you know.
That's a weird thing to call me in front of J.J. Piccolo, but whatever.
Anybody that's willing to buy you a drink, you'll flirt with them.
Okay. thank you very much to J.J. Piccolo. Back after this on WHP.